Welcome to Zichur Daf Sinai Manim. I'm Rabbi Avraham Goldhar, and today we're Masechus Shabbos Daf Tzadiches. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, it was taught in a braisa that if one throws an object from one rishus of rabim to another rishus of rabim, and there's a rishus yachid between them, if the object traveled dalad amos, 4 amos, through the rishus of rabim, he's liable. If he traveled less than 4 amos, he's pater. The Gemara says the Tanna's come to teach that rishuyus mitzdarfos, two identical domains combined for one to be liable for hotzah, meaning even if it flew 2 amos in one rishus of rabim and 2 amos in the second rishus of rabim. Additionally, we see from here that we do not say that something contained in the airspace of rishus is legally viewed as if it had come to rest, because if indeed we viewed it as if it had landed, the thrower would have been liable even if it traveled less than 4 amos, because he transferred it from the rishus of rabim into the rishus of yachid. Point number two, it was said in the name of Rav that one who transfers an object dalad amos in a roofed rishus rabim, a rishus rabim makora, he is pater, because a roofed rishus rabim does not resemble the encampment in the desert, which we learned out from the Malach of Hotzah. The Gemara questions this ruling, since the wagons, the agalas in the desert, which were used to carry the crushing, the beams, they were considered roofed because of the crushing placed on them. And Rav said in the name of Bechia that the areas beneath the wagons between them and the area to the sides had the status of rishus rabim. How could the area beneath have the status of rishus rabim if the wagons were roofed? The Gemara clarifies that the area beneath the wagons, 5 amas in length, is referring to nearly a 1 ama gap of open space in the middle of the wagon, when 2 stacks of crushing were placed at the front of the wagon and 2 stacks of crushing placed at the rear, with each stack being 1 ama in width. And point number three, a braisa introduces the Malchukas Tanaim regarding the shape of the crushing. Reviewed, it says that they were 1 ama thick below at the base, but above they gradually tapered until the tips were as thin as a finger, based on one pasuk that states, Yu tamim arosho, they shall be tamim at the top. And another pasuk regarding the waters of the Yarden that states, tamu nikrasu, they were cut off. Rabbi Nechemi says the question were 1 ama thick below at the base as well as on top, based on the pasuk yachtav, together. Rashi explains that this word implies that they were uniform throughout. So once again, the 3 points are: number one, it was taught in a braisa that if one throws an object from one rishus of rabim to another rishus of rabim, and there's a rishus yachid between them, if the object traveled dalad amos through the rishus of rabim, he's liable. If it traveled less than dalad amos, he's pater. The Gemara says the Tanna is coming to teach that rishuyus mitzdarfos, two identical domains combined for one to be liable for hotzah, meaning even if it flew 2 amos in one rishus of rabim and 2 amos in the second rishus of rabim. Additionally, you see from here that we do not say kutikman shechunt chadamya, that something contained in the airspace of a rishus is legally viewed as if it had come to rest, because if indeed we viewed it as if it had landed, the thrower would have been liable even if it traveled less than 4 amos, because he transferred it from the rishus of rabim into the rishus of yachid. Point number two, is said in the name of Rav, the one who transfers an object dalad amos in a roofed rishus of rabim, a rishus of rabim makora, he is pater, because a roofed rishus of rabim does not resemble the encampment in the desert, which is where we learned out the Malach of Hotzah. The Gemara questions this ruling, since the wagons in the desert, the agalos, which were used to carry the crushing, the beams, were considered roofed because of the crushing placed on them. And Rav said in the name of Vechia that the areas beneath the wagons, between them and the area to the sides, had the status of rishus rabim. How could the area beneath have the status of rishus rabim if the wagons were roofed? The Gemara clarifies that the area beneath the wagons, 5 amas in length, is referring to nearly a 1 ama gap of open space in the middle of the wagon, when 2 stacks of crushing were placed at the front of the wagon and 2 stacks of crushing were placed at the rear, with each stack being 1 ama in width. And point number three, a braisa introduces a Malchukas Tanaim regarding the shape of the crushing. Rabbi Yehuda says they were 1 ama thick below at the base, but above they gradually tapered until the tips were as thin as a finger, based on one pasuk that states, Yutamim arosho, they shall be tamim at its top, and another pasuk regarding the waters of the Yarden that states, Tamim nikrasu, they were cut off. Rabbi Nechemia says that the crushing were 1 ama thick below at the base as well as on top, based on the pasuk yachtav, together. Rashi explains that this word yachtav implies that they were uniform throughout. Alright, so now we go to our siman for tzadiches, but before I do, I just want to clarify that yesterday's siman, Tzadi Zayin, I said was a chess master, and a few people were scratching their heads like, Tzadi Zayin, chess master, so we use tzadi as a ch sound to expand our possibilities. So Tzadi Zayin was chess, because it sort of like, sounds like chess if you muddle up the tzadi sound. So anyway, so now we go to the siman for tzadiches, and we had many suggestions. Many came in the theme of clear, clean, a clear blue sky, cleaning agents, detergents, Joe Mann from New Jersey suggested a neat freak, likes things clean. Then we had Shlomo Tsavovich from Toronto who had a person dipping his finger at Tatzach at the Seder, which I thought was great. And Sam Yosebo from Woodmere suggested a pediatrician checking a child's temperature at 98.6 degrees. But we're going to go with the most common or popular suggestion, which relate to tzchok, comedy, or a clown. So I'm going to go with a circus clown for Tzadik Hess. So thank you, everybody. There's too many people to mention by name, but thank you all. We're going to go with clown in this case for Tzadik Hess. So here goes. The circus clown threw his red clown nose four amosu, two rishus rabims, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon carrying beams that were tapered at the end. Once again, in slow motion. The circus clown, that must mean Ron Dov Tzadik Hess. The circus clown threw his red clown nose four amos through two rishus harabim, which reminds us it was taught in the Brayza that if one throws an object from one rishus harabim to another rishus harabim, and there's a rishus hayachid in between, if the object traveled four amos through the rishus harabim, he's liable. If it traveled less than four amos, he's pater. The Gemara says the Tana is coming to teach that rishus mitzarfos, two identical domains combined for one to be liable for hotzah. Meaning, even if it flew two amos in one rishus rabim and two amos in the second rishus rabim. Additionally, we see from here that we do not say that something containing the airspace of a rishus is legally viewed as if it had come to rest, because if indeed we view it as if it had landed, the thrower would have been liable, even if it traveled less than four amos, because he transferred from the rishus rabim into the rishus yachid. So the circus clown threw his red clown nose four amos through two rishus rabim, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon, which reminds us, it was said in the name of Rav, that one who transfers an object, Dalad Amos, in a roofed Rishus Rabim, he's pater, because a roofed Rishus Rabim, Rishus Rabim Makorah, does not resemble the encampment in the desert, which is where we learn the Malach of Hotzah. The Gemara questions this ruling, since the wagons in the desert, the Agalos, which were used to carry the crushim, were considered roofed because of the crushim that were placed on them. And Rav said in the name of Rechiah that the areas beneath the wagons, between them and the area to the sides, had the status of Rishus HaRabim. Now, how could the area beneath have the status of Rishus HaRabim if the wagons were roofed? The Gemara clarifies that the area beneath the wagons, five amas in length, is referring to a nearly one amma gap of open space in the middle of the wagon, when two stacks of crushim were placed at the front of the wagon and two stacks of crushim were placed at the rear, with each stack being an amma in width. So the circus clown threw his red clown nose four amas through two Rishus HaRabim, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon carrying beams that were tapered at the end. Which reminds us that Brisa introduces Machlokas the Nine regarding the shape of the crushing. Rav Yehuda says that they were an amma thick below at the base, but above they gradually tapered until the tips were as thin as a finger, based on one pasuk that states, "You tamim arosho," they shall be tamim at the top, and another pasuk regarding the waters of the Yarden that states, "Tamu nikrasu," they were cut off. Rav Nechemia says the crushing were an amma thick below at the base as well as on top, based on the pasuk yachtav. Together, Rashi explains that the word yachtav implies they were uniform throughout. So once again, the circus clown threw his red clown nose four amos through two rishus harabim, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon carrying beams that were tapered at the end. All right, so now it's time for four blah back chazara. Dav Sadi Dalad. So the symbol of Sadi Dalad is a hunter. So here goes. The hunter, that means run Dav, Sadi Dalad. The hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy. Which reminds us, the Mishnah in Daf Tzadik Gimel on Beis stated that if one carries a live person on a bed, he's exempt for carrying the person and even for taking out the bed, because the bed is secondary to the person. The Gemara tends to prove that this is the minority opinion of Rabbi Nassim based on a brisa of the Tod, that if one carried out animals into Rishus Rabim, either dead or alive, one is liable. Rabbi Nassim, however, disagrees and says that although one is liable for carrying a dead animal, he's exempt for carrying a living animal, Shachai Noset Tzatzmo, because a living creature supports its own weight. This is like our case in the Mishnah of carrying a live person on a bed. Rabbi says that it's possible the Rabbanan also hold that in regards to a person, Hachai Noset Tzatzmo, and they only disagree with Rabbi Nassim in the case of animals, because animals stiffen themselves to try to escape, and as Rashi explains, they actually feel heavier. Therefore, they cannot be considered as if they carry themselves. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying, because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs. Which reminds us, if a Mitzora plucked out one of two white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin to prevent himself from being declared Tameh, he has transgressed a negative commandment. There's a Malchokas and Marayim regarding a case where Mitzora plucked out one of three white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin. Rav Nachman holds that he's liable because his action is potentially consequential. For if one more hair becomes removed, the tumor will depart. Rav Sheshu says he's not liable since the tumor is still present with the two remaining white hairs. Therefore, the act was inconsequential. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs, which got snagged on his partially detached fingernail. Which reminds us, it was taught in an amended brace that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that fingernails are cuticles that have become detached most of the way, may be removed by hand, but it's rabbinically forbidden to be done with a kli, with an instrument. If they did not become detached most of the way, then removing them by hand is rabbinically forbidden, and removing them with an instrument would make one liable to bring a chatas. Rabbi Bar Chana said in the name of Yochanan that removing them is only allowed where the cuticles have become detached toward the top of the finger and are peeling back toward the base of the nail, because this causes considerable pain. Dab Sadihei, so the symbol of Sadihei is a Tzahal tank commander. So here goes. The tank commander, that means run Dab Sadihei. The tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living, which reminds us, Rabbi Abba said, as explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, the one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for bona, building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Asi, who explained the pasuk, Yivan Hashem Elokim Eset Tzelah, and Hashem God built the side he had taken from man into a woman, that Kosh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought her to Adam, for in the cities by the sea they called the braider a banyasa, a builder. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakuv, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he's liable, but he's exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of the perforated pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it's considered attached to the ground. Plucking would therefore violate the malach of tolish, plucking, which is a told of kotzer, harvesting. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living that he needed her perforated flower pots for targa practice to master blasting holes of five different sizes. Which reminds us, Rabbi said there are five different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tuma, since it no longer has a use. A larger hole that will enable a liquid to seep in will render a kli unfit to be used for the mechatas, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used for the mechatas, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole, the size of a small root, makes the kli a natzitz nakuv, a perforated pot, and the seeds inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tameh. A larger hole, the size of an olive, will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tumah, since it's typically no longer usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then they are still makabel tuma. And a hole the size of a pomegranate will render a kli no longer susceptible to tuma, even was designated to be used to hold pomegranates. However, if it's surrounded by a sealed cover and is inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent tuma from entering the interior unless the majority of the kli is broken. Rashi explains that tuma can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. Dav Tzadivav. So the Simfrat Tzadivav is a town crier reading a government proclamation. So here goes. The town crier proclaimed. Town crier proclaimed. That means run Dav Tzadivav. The town crier proclaimed that no balls were to be thrown from balcony to balcony, which reminds us, in the opening mission of the 10th parak, which discusses cases of transferring by throwing Zrika, or handing over Hashata, it's taught that if one hands over or throws an object from one balcony in Rishus Yachid to another balcony in Rishus Yachid on the other side of Rishus Rabim, he's exempt. Whereas if the two balconies were on the same side of the Rishus Rabim, he would be exempt for throwing the item, but liable for handing it over. The Mishnah explains that the Malach of Hotza is fashioned after the Avodas Levim, the work of the Levim, who transferred the Mishkan's beams onto wagons in Rishus Rabim. Since the Malach was done specifically through handing over, one is not liable for throwing, and since the transfer was done along the length of Rishus Rabim, one is not liable for handing an object across a Rishus Rabim. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations, which reminds us, the Gemara seeks the source of the Malach Motzah and quotes Rabbi Yochanan, who says, it's one of the pasuk in the parts of the collection of the donations for the Mishkan. Yitzav Moshe ve'yaviru kol b'machaneh. And Moshe commanded, and they sent the proclamation in the camp. Moshe was standing in the Machaneh Levi, which was considered a Rishus HaRabim, and was telling Bnei Yisrael not to take out and bring materials from their Rishus HaYachim, from their homes, into the Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Yochanan learns that that day was a Shabbos, from a Gezer Shabbos. It says here, Vayaviru kol b'machaneh, and they sounded a proclamation in the camp. And it says regarding Yom Kippur of Yovel, Vavarta shofar trua, and you shall sound a broken blast of the shofar. Just as Yom Kippur is a day of prohibition, so too here in this pasuk, it's a day of prohibition, meaning Shabbos. So the town crier proclaimed that no balls would be thrown from balcony to balcony while the king's wagons were loaded up with donations and with wood gathered for the royal bonfire. Which reminds us, the Gemara brings various opinions regarding which malachim the Makoshesh Eitzim, the gatherer of wood, transgressed and made him liable in the Midbar for transgressing Shabbos. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, he was a mavir, a transfer of wood, dalet amos, four amos in Rishus Rabbi. Atan and Braisa taught, he was a tolish, a detacher of wood that was still growing. And Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi Yaakov, said he was a ma'amir, a gatherer of detached and scattered wood. The Gemara identifies him as Tzolavcha, the father of five daughters, who inherited him in the Midbar. Daf Tzadi Zayin. So the symbol for Tzadi Zayin is a chess master. So here goes. When the chess master, that means Ron Daf Tzadi Zayin. When the chess master got angry because he got Saras, which reminds us, it was taught in the Brisa, Rabbi Kiva learned from the Pasuk, V'yichar af Hashem bam v'yelach, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against them and he left. Then we learn from the word them that not only was Miriam afflicted with Saras, but Aaron was as well. Rabbi Yudim and Masera told Rabbi Kiva that in the future we'll have to give an accounting, because if what he said was true, Rabbi Kiva revealed something negative about Aaron that the Torah concealed, and if it's not true, then he has falsely maligned him. A Brisa was brought that supported Rabbi Kiva's view based on the Pasuk, V'yifan Aaron el Miriam mihine mitzaras. And Aaron turned to Miriam, and behold, she was afflicted with Saras. And Aaron turned can be interpreted to mean he turned away from his own Saras, which was cured first. So when the chess master got angry because he got Saras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, which reminds us, it was taught in a Braisa that if someone throws an object from one Rishus HaRabim to another Rishus HaRabim, and there's a Rishus HaYachid in between, the Rebbe holds him liable, while the Chachamim hold that he is Patzer. Rav and Shmuel both say that Rebbe holds he's only chayiv if the Rishus Yachid was roofed. For we say that a house is as though it is full of articles, therefore the object is perceived as if it had come to rest there. Rashi explains that since it's both dark and stuffy, a house is regarded as though it lacks airspace and is filled to the top. So when the chess master got angry because he got Saras, he threw his chess pieces from Rishus HaRabim through a stuffy house into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side, landing four amas away, not eight. Which reminds us, the Gemara initially states that it is clear that if one intended to throw an object 8 amos in Rishus HaRabim, but he actually threw it only 4 amos, then it is similar to the case where one intended to write the name Shimon and only wrote the first two letters, Shin and Mem, where he's liable for achatas. Later the Gemara explains that they are not comparable, since in the case of writing, it's impossible to write Shimon without writing the first two letters of Shin, Mem. Thus inherent in the writer's original intent is to write the name Shem first, but in the case of throwing an object, the person that intends to throw an item 8 amos obviously does not intend it to land after the initial 4 amos. Okay, so now we conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions, plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do we discuss the Makoshesh Eitzim? That's on daf Tzadivav. Good. Number 2, which daf do we have Makokos regarding what the din is if a Mitzvah plucked out one of 3 white hairs? That's on daf Tzadidalad. Good. Number 3, which stuff do we discuss if one forgot why he stored something and then he took it out? We go al das rishona and based on his original intent. That's on daf Tzadi. Good. Number 4, which stuff do you that Aaron also got Saras? That's on daf Tzadi Zayin. Great. Number 5, which stuff do we discuss an atzitz nakuv? That's on daf Tzadi Hey. Great. Number 6, which stuff do we discuss what the din is if someone took something into Rishus HaRabim and then changed their mind what they want to do with it before the Hanacha? That's on daf Tzadi Aleph. Good. Number 7, which stuff do we discuss someone throwing something 4 amos when he intended to throw it 8 amos? That's on daf Tzadi Zayin. Good. Number 8, which stuff do we know that one full shear is sufficient for 2 people? That's on daf Tzadi Gimel. Good. Number 9, which daf do you learn the source for the Malacha V'Hotzah? That's on daf Tzadi Vav. Good. And finally, number 10, which daf do you learn 5 different measures of perforations for a Kli Cheres? That's on daf Tzadi Hey. Good. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do you learn about the importance of relieving oneself before davening Shmoneh Esrei? Otherwise, it's a Toeva. That's on daf Chav Gimel. Good. Number 2, which daf do you learn when one makes a Berei Nefashos? That's on daf Mem Dog. Great. And finally, number 3, which daf do you learn what the din is if someone forgot to make a brach and he swallowed the food? That's on daf Nunav. Good. All right. That concludes our pop quiz. plus the three bonus questions of Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day, great learning.